Welcome back to Glass Onion Minute. This is the Movie by Minute podcast where we break down the second Benoit Blanc mystery, the second Knives Out mystery, Glass Onion. We're going to do it 1 minute of screen time per episode. I am your host for this week. My name is Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. And I am honored to bring back for Minute 89.
That's right. I am Rick Ingham from the Mad Max Minute.
All right. Today's episode, we're covering Minute 124. Begins with Miles asking,
"Oh, really?"
To Whiskey, while Claire and Lionel decide to join in the fun.
Join in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You go.
Yeah, I think we should. Hey, Miles!
Okay.
I get it, guys. Let it all out. Hey, Mazel Tov.
Oh, coming in real hot.
Helen, easy.
Whoa. I think that belonged to Liberace.
Okay, hey. Are we done?
Whoa, whoa.
And ends with Miles wondering.
Not done.
Whoa.
Now, in yesterday's episode, where we did manage to talk about the movie Saturn III and dubbing over Andy McDowell's voice with Glenn Close and Greystoke, we also mainly talked about the destruction and that Birdie and Whiskey have joined in. And now we're seeing everyone else joining in. And the point I made in yesterday's episode, and I think, Rick, you agreed with me, that everyone that you said that they had co-opted and this was like appropriation of Helen's anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more of they see the action without they're mimicking her action without mimicking her emotion. And I think that is going to come very clear, especially as you see Claire and Lionel decide to join in and throw the glass things on the ground. And even Meg does, and she can't believe that she did it. I mean, this just turns into a carnage of broken glass.
It really does. And as I mentioned the other day, a lot of the people in this room are wearing open-toed sandals. So as long as they step lightly and carefully, I'm all for it. Just step carefully, people.
in second 31, they have a wide shot when they're watching Helen, They've all, this kind of is kind of symbolic of this minute. They've all thrown a bunch on the ground and they're all turned to watch what Helen is doing as if to say, what shall we do now? And you see Meg is wearing sandals.
Mm-hmm.
She is wearing freaking sandals at this point. So it makes me hope that the glass on the ground is kind of like candy glass or something that just sort of just as harmless, and they're not actually standing on a bunch of broken glass.
Right.
So, and by the way, there's the painting again of Edward Norton's head painted on Brad Pitt's body from Fight Club. It's you're seeing that like everyone grabs some stuff and they do. And of course, Miles is just trying to be as nonchalant as ever. And there's a great, I love, they do this a lot in the movie Trading Places, and they did it here, which is having humor done with placing people in front of paintings. And you see him holding up his hand where he's got the lighter in one hand and the cup in the other. And behind him, there's the painting of, it looks like an African god on a lion holding up a staff that looks like it's a torch with a goblet in his other hand. So it's like the two of them are mirrored. Then if you go to second 23 in this minute, it's again, he's portraying himself as this Brad Pitt god in one. He's gesturing like he's this, I don't know what the picture is behind him, but as if he's a god behind him there. And trying to act above everything. And you kind of get the sense that this is, and he even throws down the glass and says, Mazel Tov. But we're see that he's trying his best to cover up for what he's really thinking, which is, please have this stop.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that, you see the picture I'm pointing to in the back there.
I do.
And there was, I said in second, what was it? Second 24, he's kind of standing and it kind of mirrors the picture behind him. And in a film this planned out, I know something like that is not an accident. So there now, she, an interesting thing happens around the time he says Mazel Tov and throws down the glass, and Helen grabs, it's like the glass samurai with the weapon on it.
Yeah, the glass suit of armor that held the crossbow that shot across the room into Miles' chest back during the dinner scene where Benoit completely unraveled every single element of this seemingly well thought out mystery that Miles had written for him.
But do you notice what happened around then that shows the shift in this scene? And this is my pop quiz time. What happens? Do you notice? And when everyone starts to get nervous.
See. Well, are you referring to Helen taking the mace from the knight and destroying the crystal piano?
Nope. Before that, the change and shift in the entire scene. And it's actually kind of sort of brilliant. Because you see, the minute this happens, everyone changes. Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
The music cuts out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm watching.
You have the very playful violin strings have been happening since she began. And everyone joins in. And they throw the stuff on the ground. It's really fun. Everyone's laughing and laughing and laughing. And then the music cuts out. And everyone starts to get, oh, wait a minute. And so when the music ends, that's when everyone's participation of it is over. That's when they're all, that shot when they're all looking at her like, yeah, we've all destroyed it. Oh, she hasn't stopped. So they all got their joy, which is, I'm going to break a few things. That was fun. And now with the music out, it's like, oh, wait a minute. She hasn't stopped. And when she takes the mace and destroys the suit of armor, you see as she goes by, she now goes by Claire, who's no longer having fun throwing the thing up. She holds her hands up. She goes, whoa, coming through, hot stuff. And no one knows how to react anymore because, oh, wait a minute, we've done the crashing thing. Wasn't that fun?
What more is there to do?
Yeah. And now when she goes over to the piano and starts smashing it, suddenly you see everyone, like I mentioned in the previous episode, that Birdie understands every third word, according to Kate Hudson. Now she's back to being like, you're destroying valuable things. She said, I think that was owned by Liberace. And so now it's no longer fun. Now it's like, oh, wait a minute. We can't keep up with her anger because our anger is only superficial and wanting the fun of breaking things like you're a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think, and I've watched this minute several times before you and I hooked up today to record these episodes, and it's not subtle. The nanosecond the music ends, everyone is looking at her as if to say, huh? Yeah? Oh, wait. Oh. And everyone, the Catherine Hahn, who's so great in this movie, she holds her hands up. It's like, oh, and like she goes, like, oh, and like what is, I no longer understand what's happening. I thought I understood what was happening, but I no longer do. And now you also see Miles, from the minute he goes Mazel Tov, he thought, okay, that's it. I broke one, as if to say, okay, I broke one too. I've joined the fun. But now he's like, oh, wait, she's not stopping. And there's no, I don't know where this is going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I love when music can be used as a character or music can really be used to convey a specific thing. Sometimes it's the lack of music in a scene that can be used to convey something very strong. I remember John Williams saying about Jaws, obviously the music is practically a character in that movie, partly because the shark didn't work, so you needed the music score to let when the shark was showing up. But when the kids do the hoax on the 4th of July with a cardboard fin, he made sure not to put the shark music in that. Then you're watching that and go like, oh, wait a minute, there's something right. not right here. There's something not right here. And then when everyone's at the beach when the kids were doing the hoax, and the real shark goes into the estuary where the Rorschach's son is, then they play the music as if to say, that was fake, this one's real. And that's just, and Bernard Herrmann does it like crazy of where they drop the music in terms of like Psycho, in terms of Vertigo, where, oh, there's no music at this particular moment. Oh, now it's starting again. And this is just very skillful. Like, they could have kept the music going and the violins going faster and faster and faster. But now it's the fun is taken away, but you're hearing the smashing. The glass is still smashing, which is what you would actually be hearing in that room, because there's no violin player going like crazy in the corner.
Yeah.
And so it's less about the fun. It's no longer fun. Now it's about destruction. And you've had fun, but I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, because it was never about just smashing the glass for Helen. That's not the final end goal of this.
Right. And as we said the other day, the destructors are all very shallow. They only understand the shallow parts of the actions. Oh, I got clicks. Oh, I got this miles. I got this piece of art, which there's someone that pointed out that one of the pieces of art is actually hanging upside down. Like Miles doesn't even know what he has on his wall. By the way, I don't know if it was in this shot or in this minute or the previous minute. I can't, forgive me. A lot of stuff gets broken. But one of the things that's broken is a glass replica of the Maltese Falcon, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, I think that might be my favorite of the things that are smashed in this room.
Yeah.
It's the little glass Maltese Falcon that Whiskey takes out.
It's fabulous. And it's so, and these are stupid people. Let's get down to brass tacks. And this is coming from a guy who does a baseball podcast. These are stupid people. These are people who only can understand life if it's based upon clicks and based upon, am I mimicking what successful people are doing? They're mimics, they're parrots. And now that they're witnessing actual rage instead of, do you know what it is? I'll tell you what it is, Rick. I just remembered this. You're witnessing me remembering something. This may be an apocryphal story, and I'm going to attribute it to Leonard Bernstein, but music fans, I don't remember who it was. I'm going to say Leonard Bernstein because it's that level of music genius who was attributed to saying this. Mm-hmm. But the point of it stands, no matter who it was or whether it actually happened, that this great music genius, let's call it Leonard Bernstein, was watching a child prodigy play a piece of music on the piano, and he was technically perfect, and he did all the notes right and everything like that. When asked how the child did, he said, "You've learned the notes, now you have to learn the music." As if to say, you've mechanically hit all the notes in the right order, but there's no feeling behind it. It's just the action without the emotion behind it. And so for everyone else picking up the glass thing here, or the glass globe there, whatever the hell they were throwing on the ground and smashing it, they were hitting the notes, but they weren't playing the music. There you go. Yeah. Whatever renegade brain cell had that story was just fired that one.
Gosh. So, well, the theme song for this minute could definitely be Give Me Something to Break, or whatever that Limp Bizkit song is.
Exactly. By the way, all right, we'll tell you, you know what? This was fun. We broke a lot of stuff, but now the breaking is continuing, and it's no longer going to be a lot of fun. But it's always fun to have Rick Ingham on the show. Rick, for people who haven't, who just have decided to jump into the podcast on this episode, what the hell are you doing? But yeah, tell people
I love people who jump in on, you know, a random Thursday on a random podcast they've never listened to. Those people are bold and exciting. And if you love bold and exciting things, check out the Mad Max Minute, where we talk about the Mad Max movies 1 minute at a time, my co-host Julia and I. Or if you are more of a sword boy, you can check out Sword Boys Cut by Cut, which I host with Jonathan and Robin, my other co-host, where we talk about sword movies from the 80s, 90s, and today, just like your favorite classic rock station. So yeah, you can find both of those, madmaxminute.com, swordboys.biz. Check out my websites.
Rick, I may have asked this at a previous minute, and I'm going off piste here a little bit. What is your opinion of the very first Mad Max film? The 19, what was it, 78, 79?
1979.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, which... no. Yeah, 79. Yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. I think it is great because it is so focused and encapsulated. That's the one of the things I love about George Miller's style of storytelling, is he really can dial in on individual characters. And that first Mad Max movie is just such a great examination of a man who thinks he has it all together, and then his world is absolutely smashed, like a room full of glass figurines. And you know, but no, the Mad Max 79 is an amazing film. Should only be watched with the original Australian actors, though. Do not watch the American dub. It is a travesty of filmmaking. No.
I have to tell you this, because I saw it. It was a staple on cable television. Mm-hmm. And I saw the Road Warrior. It was one of those, you don't remember, it was one of those films like Just One of the Guys. It was always on cable. And so I saw the Road Warrior in pieces a million times, beginning to end, probably four or five times. And it was one of those, like, I wanted to show my friends, have you seen the Road Warrior? You pop it in and then you play it. Like, oh my God. I thought the Road Warrior is an absolute perfect piece of action cinema. And I saw Thunderdome, which I liked. I don't think it's anywhere near the Road Warrior. And then I didn't see the original Mad Max until many, many, many years later. I'm I saw the Road Warrior first time in like 84, and I saw the original Mad Max with the Australian actors, I'm going to guess 98, 99. It was decades later. It may have even been in the 2000s. And I was startled by it because I was very glad I saw it when I did. Because it's like the origin story. The comic books didn't always start with the origin story. Sometimes the origin story was several issues in. So I knew Mad Max through the Road Warrior, through Thunderdome, and this was like the origin of Mad Max. And so I always wondered, someone like you, who's a Mad Max aficionado, who, I didn't know if you saw it in the correct order, I saw it so many years later that it felt like a companion piece rather than its own movie to me. Do you understand what I mean?
No, I understand it. I think a lot of people saw Road Warrior first.
Yeah.
Personally, I saw Thunderdome first because it was just constantly on reruns because it was the easiest to edit for television.
Right. yeah,
I saw Thunderdome first, then I saw Road Warrior, and it was only until long after that I first saw Mad Max 79 and realized just how good it was on its own. And it's so gritty and real.
Oh my God. It is. It's so low budget, and it works that it's low budget. For those of you, I know this is not Mad Max Minute, but I've always been curious. Cause I just, as I said, I saw it so long after the fact that I just was curious what you thought of that, because it just, as again, it feels like a supplement to the Road Warrior as opposed to its own movie to me. I can't imagine just seeing that movie on its own.
Yeah.
Like, and I can only see it in conjunction with the Road Warrior.
It has a real timeless quality to it. I think it was George Miller who said he wants you to look at Mad Max and think, oh yeah, this happens like next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That he wasn't going for some far flung off future apocalypse. No, for that first one, imagine it takes place next Tuesday. And that first Mad Max film, yeah, it's got some style elements to it that maybe scream a certain decade, but in other ways, it's timeless enough where it could literally take place next week.
All right,
and that's what I love about it.
All right. Well, look, I had to ask because I had you on here again. Well, hey, I'm going to have you on for another show, but we're going to focus on a bunch of other things. Follow this show at Glass Onion Minute, Glass Onion Min on Twitter, all one word. And please listen to us. We're here dropping new episodes Monday through Friday. And stay tuned tomorrow on Friday's episode. The destruction is going to be a little less fun and a little more serious, and you're going to see that Miles can't keep his poker face going as we go to Glass Onion here on Glass Onion Minute.